Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast. You are
what you eat. The main systemic need, which is that we need to shorten the distance from the seed to the table in order to have a market that stimulates, that actually demands, pressures the grower to diversify. And that is absolute anathema to the corporate empire, which was built on pushing people off the land and then creating vast monocultures, pressuring any people who were left on the land to become bigger and bigger and bigger to survive, to merge or die. And that meant more chemicals because it's so unnatural. So inevitably, it means more fear, it means more chemicals, whereas if you have a range of things, you know, one hailstorm, one flood, one drought is not going to destroy everything.
That's a reminder of the conversation between permaculture educator Morag Gamble and localization activist Helena Norberg Hodge that we're listening to over a couple of weeks on the Local Food Connection show. You heard the first part of the conversation last week and you're about to hear the second half. But first, I'd like to say that I'm Anne Stanley and this is the Local Food Connection show. The show promotes sustainable food systems that foster community resilience and empower people to make choices for themselves, their communities and the environment. Local Food Connections is brought to you by Local Food Connect. We're broadcasting from Wurundjeri country and pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. We respect the enduring strength of First Nations people and acknowledge their long heritage of agriculture and care for the land on which we live. Now, over to Morag again, and we'll continue the conversation. Hope you enjoy it.
The rural-urban question. You know, there's often the conversation around, well, it's more sustainable to live in the cities, whereas I hear often you talk about actually a re-ruralization, like connecting. Can you just speak a bit to that? Because I know that that's a really big question that people are often asking. Oh, I can't go out to the countryside because I'll need to transport myself too much or something of that nature.
Yeah. No, I think the urban question, first of all, if people would be allowed to look honestly at what's happening and see that their taxes and the laws and regulations are encouraging mass urbanization. So they're destroying rural livelihoods. Now, what does that mean? That means even medium-sized cities being destroyed, basically, as post offices are closed down and moved to the big city, as the hospital is moved to the big city. And all the time, our taxes are supporting that. People haven't asked for that. And there's no discussion of it because left and right politically have been doing the same thing. The entire process of modernity has been breaking down our deeper relationship with nature. And absolutely as part and parcel of that, our deeper relationship with one another, which is just as important and often doesn't get talked about enough. You know, there's a big awakening, thank goodness, about the healing that comes from nature connection, but it's also that deeper human connection that we have to nurture and be aware of. So this urbanization has been going on, and somehow we just now don't have a clear movement that talks about it. We did back in the 70s. We did in the beginning of the environmental movement. We had the awareness. We want decentralization. We don't want to continue with this centralization and urbanization. And now I'm just hoping in the next year or so we're going to become more aware of that fundamental factor and realize that accompanying this continued destruction of the smaller town, the smaller city, even rural livelihoods, the smaller farms, all the time, so it's bigger, 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 faster, faster, is killing us. It should be clear that we need to move in the opposite direction. Mm. But one of the myths that keeps getting pushed is we're too many people to go back to the land. and that with so many people, we must have the big to feed the world. Those are just absolute lies. But the people who mouth them are not aware that they're lying because they've been hearing it. And on a superficial level, you can sort of understand how people might imagine that if people all crowd together in one little place, there's more space for wildlife. And so that nature has more. Absolute rubbish, because the honest truth is in those cities, the per capita consumption of water, of all of nature, increases geometrically. So the decentralized part, which doesn't mean, you know, one person per acre, but that would allow concentrations of people working, you know, closer with their particular environment, their particular forests. You know, when we talk about farming, we're also talking about fish, we're talking about forestry, we're talking about really all the primary production. So there are basically myths to get over, and the wonderful thing is that so many good initiatives have happened from the city. So it's not as though in order to do something, you have to leave the city. It's in the city that often people get organized in groups and start taking initiatives that are part of this localizing trend. You know, I noticed here someone was saying, what do I say about a combination of globalization and localization? And I'd like to address that quickly by saying that here, when I'm talking about globalization, I'm talking about an economic process whereby globally active banks and corporations, and these are institutions, were given more and more power and freedom by our government. So free trade is not about trade between countries. It's about individual governments giving global corporations more freedom, no rules. So there they are, moving around globally, no rules, and no taxes for them. Instead, our governments have been subsidizing the rollout of the bigger and bigger highways, straighter and straighter, bigger and bigger for bigger and bigger lorries, bigger ports, bigger and bigger ships, cargo ships, bigger and bigger airport. And that has included subsidizing the R&D at university. So in the system at every level, the big has been favored, and they have no rules, no regulation. So that's become very, very dangerous, because they have also had fewer and fewer rules around how much they test a pesticide or a pharmaceutical before they put it in the market. The testing, the protection that we used to have that came from a lot of hard work from the environmental movement, so much of it has been removed. So no, we don't want to keep part of that. So if we see that globalization is this economic trajectory, continue with that. We want every business to be place-based or localized. So we want, you know, Coca-Cola to decide, okay, you're going to be American, okay, register here. Mitsubishi, are you going to be Japanese? Volvo, are you going to be Swedish? Or you want to go off and be Portuguese or something? Maybe Portugal will have you. But we're going to have a movement that has clarity about pressuring their government to get back around the tables where they as groups are signing away their rights, signing away our rights. And now we're going to be demanding that we will be at the table, civic society will be at the table, because we don't trust our government so much anymore to do the right thing. So with civic society at the table, we collaborate to take on what looks like a very big and very powerful empire. But when you also step back and look at that, that empire has fake money that makes it seem so powerful because we give them that power. Their wealth is actually becoming less and less, and their numbers are less and less, fewer and fewer. They do not represent 1% of humanity. They are far less, you know, 1% would be 80 million people. So it's so sad that because many people think, oh, it's too big to think about, it's too big to change, we are actually giving that power to that system. So,
Helena, you were talking there about civil society and
before I forget that, when I was saying we don't want globalization, I'm saying we do not want the economic trajectory of giving those global corporations and banks more power and telling them it's fine if you don't pay tax, but we're going to keep subsidizing you and you're not going to have any rules to protect us from toxic chemicals. No. However, people confuse globalization with more international exchange and collaboration. And as I was saying, our work from the outset has been about more international collaboration and exchange, because it's been precisely a lack of that that have kept people asleep, I would say. And it's really shocking that in the era of the internet, when we think we're so well informed, we have actually become less well informed. Now, why has that happened? As I see it, the internet has been used primarily as a tool by those corporations, primarily as a way of extracting wealth. And what have they been able to do? One of the main things is to increase the time pressure on the average citizen. We are running faster and faster and faster. So what does that mean? It means that when I was young, almost everyone after school would travel around the world, slowly spending time learning from other cultures. There was a much deeper exchange between so-called rich and so-called poor countries at that time. Much better understanding than there's been in these last 30 years. So, again, absolutely, we want international collaboration and exchange, and it's more urgent than ever. And it's just counterproductive to call that globalization, like it is counterproductive to use the term regenerative when it's being used in a way that we now know that includes glyphosate and giant monocultures. So let's try to, it's a beautiful word. So, you know, sustainable is a nice word too, but many people have realized that it's been so abused.
How would you describe that type of work then, if we feel like both sustainable and regenerative have lost their meaning? How would you describe that? What language would you use?
Yeah, well, again, that's where I'm talking about local systems as being, but I would say human scale, community building, diversity above ground, not just in the soil, which regenerative, the corporations manage to manipulate into something very shallow. They want diversity, of course, in the soil, in our biome, and above ground. And the best way to, and that includes also animals in the cycle, which is very controversial. But I really hope that people will see that animals as part of a diversified human scale system is the exact opposite of what the animal factories are, which should not be allowed. We should be shut down. The minute we start taking control of the corporate world, the first thing to go would be those animal factories, toxic, cruel, to both animals and human. What people don't realize is, I don't want to sound too arrogant, but what I came to deeply experience in many cultures was that more traditionally, what developed in the farming communities was a beautiful, deep relationship between humans and animals. And, you know, seeing little boys carrying a newborn goat and seeing what it meant to grow up caring for animals, but also seeing animals dying and generally being more in touch with the cycles of life created a completely different, less, again, fear-based way of living, but also this deep communication between humans and animals. We shouldn't do that with wildlife. You know, I feel a bit guilty because I sometimes have loved feeding, you know, wild birds who will come and eat out of my hand. I love it, but I feel guilty. I know I shouldn't be interrupting with those wild animals. So that deep human-animal connection is actually best through domesticated animals. And it it can be incredibly beautiful, enlightening, and put us in daily contact with our dependence on the rest of life and our footprint. It changes everything.
6 years I've been in desert.
Beyond the Bars is 3CR's annual prison project, giving voice to our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander inmates right across Victoria.
It's good to be here because Aboriginal radio, and you don't really get to do this much, brings us all together.
Time, you'll get your time to take that first step out that front door to freedom beyond these walls.
Make sure. And I just want to say thank you to all of you for giving us the opportunity to speak on air.
The bigger the reason, the bigger the calling. Make your commitment and watch things unfold.
And you can listen to audio from this year's broadcasts and previous years as well. Online at any time, just go to 3cr.org.au/beyondthebars.
But also, while I'm here, I'd like to say thank you for all for coming, helping, giving us a chance to do this. It's really good, you know. It's been going for a while now. Hopefully it goes, it keeps going. You know, like, it's good that we can do this and get our voice out there as prisoners.
We can't blame everything on the external, so let's stop looking for it in the hands of the persecutor, because real power comes from here, and it comes from family.
If you would like us to post you a free CD, contact the station on 03 9419 8377.
This is the Local Food Connection show on 3CR 855 kHz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. You can visit the 3CR website and listen to the live streaming of the show. You can go to our many podcasts by going to 3CR Local Food Connections. Today we're hearing from Morag Gamble in conversation with Helena Norberg Hodge, founder of Local Futures and convener of World Localisation Day, on the topic of localisation of the food system.
Yeah. You're just making me think of my window is right here looking out to the food forest, and there's a little opening of sort of just a little bit of meadow space. And it's where it's the Kangaroo Mothers Club hangout spot. And I look out the window and the kangaroo mothers are out here, and their little babies sort of come out, and I watch them every day as they just, you know, finding their feet. And my 13-year-old son was walking up the path, because I've made the path from the top of the block down to the house, so you come through the food forest past the kangaroo mothers. And he's going, "Mum." And he called out to me, and he just was stopped so still, and they'd started to come up to him. He was just so excited. And so, like, it's not like he wasn't feeding them, but there is a relationality going on there, and just being seen, being noticed by the animals around you for a 13-year-old boy, I think that's an extraordinary gift to be able to share.
Sorry, Jenna's saying we should focus on actions and behaviors of practice rather than getting caught up in use of language. And I disagree with that, Jenna. I see so many examples, first of all, where this is not about changing values. I'm seeing people who value, who are, you know, really want community and who really value respect for all of nature, and yet what they're doing without knowing it is to help destroy it. So we have this situation now where so much of what needs to happen is more intellectual. And the use of language, I'm a proponent of diversity at every level, cultural diversity. I'm begging for people to understand how they might be contributing to the death of other cultures. And that includes their languages. So it's so paradoxical to be nitpicking about regenerative and sustainable that I can understand the impatience of people like you who are involved with the actual regeneration on the land, the actual, you know, working that is changing. And that includes funding. You know, it includes billions of dollars coming from philanthropists. billions of dollars are being, you know, in one way or another, handled by these people. But from my point of view, it's not going to where it needs to go. So how to change that mental map so that whether it's philanthropists who have... You're losing me?
Yeah. I heard you just say something about we need to shift the where the money is going.
Yeah, and what they're actually doing under these labels that actually are supporting, as I say, with regenerative, happily, big farms and using glyphosate. It's also about when I show a film, for instance, talking about how important it is to build local food economies, many people will say, well, that's elitist. You know, that local food is more expensive, and how can you expect someone who's struggling to survive to be spending more money on the food? Again, my plea there is to say to people, I am not asking you to just buy local food, and I'm not asking you to give up your job in the town to become a permaculturist where you grow your own food. Maybe you could donate $10 a week to something that's really valuable, which would be, you know, a lot less than buying organic local food. Maybe you could volunteer for an hour or so. And even if you couldn't do that, even if you have neither the time nor the financial resources, I hope you would take the time to share the film, to share this voice that then can help to build up the movement where we will change both the policies that are now pushing us in the wrong direction, but where we will also, even before that, liberate more money from the philanthropic sector. And so that means almost anyone sort of middle class and above should be able to donate in one way or another to help more people actually start on the track of healing the planet and healing themselves. So I'm coming from a different perspective from people who think, yes, you know, let's just focus on these action projects. Yeah, so I'm also talking to some billionaires and people who think, okay, I've got to do the project. And I'm saying, okay, you're wanting to spend 5 years to build up this model of a really, you know, regenerative farm. Why don't you instead spend some money making visible all the things that are happening around the world that are beneficial and that need support? Mm-hmm. Most of them are coming from the grassroots, blood, sweat, and tears, yeah, almost no support, and where people are struggling and they're often getting burned out and not able to continue.
Need to help the unseen to be seen, and for those sort of islands of coherence that are all around the world to actually become visible and to see each other and to know that we're part of this global movement of change. Yeah. And that's part of what this work that I do here is, Helena. And but like you're saying, there's no funding for any of this, really. This is a free event, no budget. Thank you all for being here. And, you know, we keep doing this work and people keep doing this work everywhere because it matters, because we know that it's important to be doing this. So, having that opportunity to try and redirect some of that, or to celebrate those people who are just doing it because they care. I mean, you've done that your entire life as well, doing it because you care. You don't really have an option, I don't think, Helena. Like me, we don't have an option to do anything else. This is what we do with our lives. No.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just, and also I feel that, it gives so much joy to be able to contribute to these positive things. And I feel so privileged to be in touch with so many wonderful people. But by the way, what I see is it's probably 80% women who are doing the truly beautiful, smaller, human-scale, community-based, and deeply ecological, and that means spiritual. You know, it's really the work that is, you know, bringing joy to the soul and truly connecting us, bringing us back to what it is to be human. And it's 80% women. and with very little recognition, very little support, and we really, really need to change this and to have a real multiplier effect.
Mm. Thank you, Helena, for being here.
Bring the message that we need both a no and many yeses, that we can be all united in saying this monolithic path, supported by AI and supported by governments on left and right, is something that we need to be saying no to. We need to do it kindly. We need to do it with compassion for the people who are trapped in that worldview. And I'm not saying that all the CEOs of the world are wonderful people, but I'm saying let's not dehumanize and people that we've never met. It's so clear when you talk to these people, all the assumptions that are around us support what they're doing. They're being told they're employing all these people. GDP has got to grow. So we've got, again, these ideas that are driving people to push in that direction, and they're, you know, thoroughly educated into that. It's very rare to find economists who truly recognize that the real economy is the living earth. Mm. And so it's our task to make it very clear that we're not going to be supporting a set of ideas or institutions that want to keep taking us towards an artificial world, a man-made world, a world that started in Europe, is no longer just white Western men. It's a totally global, we have, you know, people from every culture who are becoming billionaires in that, or from every continent, and you're becoming billionaires and supporting an absolutely destructive path. It cannot support life. It cannot support development. So we want to have a very clear no, and we want to have a very, very clear billions of yeses towards a multitude of more localized, community-based, and really natural ways of doing things. And I'm loving being in touch with things like a new movement towards natural dying, you know, very different funerals, a whole joyous community celebration of every aspect of life, including death. And the multitude of ways that that are being created and every day more is, and that's of course the most important part of World Localization Day, is to try to map them. And we have several mapping projects now in different countries, so that everyone can be aware how much is happening that is positive and what are the possibilities, you know, what can we engage with. So the and I see Natalia saying the real economy is the living earth, exactly. Mm. And that's also a new project we have in Sweden called the Real Economy, and I hope people will look at that, where we now have been able to make quite a lot of progress and had mainstream coverage in the media. We're working with a well-known actor from the Skarsgård family. And so that project, too, is a very clear no to the artificial economy, urging us all to come back to the real economy, the living earth. And, my hope is that World Localization Day will get out to even more people this year than it has.
So that's an invitation for everyone to open up the link, to take a look, get involved, map, host an event, share it on. We're all co-creating this as we move forward. Helena, I really need to wrap up because I need to let Charlie and Brenna come in soon. Thank you so very much for being here.
Is there going to be singing?
I'm sure there will be singing. Yeah. Has to be singing if Charlie's around.
I hope I see you guys when I'm back in Australia. Yeah.
All right. It's so lovely to see you. Enjoy your time there and all the work that you're doing. And yeah, thank you so much, Helena. Take care. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Local Food Connections on 3CR, and today we've been hearing a conversation between Morag Gamble and Helena Norberg Hodge about localization, and in particular localization of the food system. Until next week, love the land you're on, share your surplus, and take care of each other.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.